We had a discussion, Don led us in a discussion about bounding joy. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
We kind of went and we shared a little bit back and forth, looking at the scripture and seeing what we all got out of the scripture that he shared. And I was thinking about that this whole week, bounding joy. And in fact, last Sunday, I thought it was something when we got home, and kind of kept it a secret from Tammy, and I've been thinking about it just all week, and I finally looked it up online, and, you know, looked at it several times, and just went back to being a little kid and laughing over the whole thing. And it may not mean anything to y'all, but before we go there, I thought, bounding joy, what about bounding hope, bounding love, and so, and bounding peace, all of that stuff. And I texted Don, and I said, what do you think about us doing a series? And I thought I would just do this one, this journey of bounding hope, and then he would take over and do the rest. And he said, okay, it's yours. Great idea. And it's kind of like Advent in August.
Oh,
you know, because we're going over, even though we're out of order because we did joy first, and now we're getting into the, because joy is last, isn't it?
Love is last.
Love is last, that's right. Yeah, that's the one that ties everything together. So I'm just learning. I'm new. So this journey of bounding hope. And what came to mind last Sunday at home and what I was watching online, I'm going to declare something first. I want to declare for you people that might want to listen and try something mean to me or to the Vineyard Church of the Peninsula. I just want to give, for fair use, lyrics and music by Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman. Copyright 1964, Wonderland Music Company, Incorporated. So, Walt Disney, you just keep this stuff to yourself. All right, here we go. Fair use, once again. The wonderful thing about Tiggers. Mm-hmm. Y'all remember that?
Yes.
Remember
that
movie? Winnie the Pooh. Well, the wonderful thing about Tiggers is Tiggers are wonderful things. Their tops are made out of rubber. Their bottoms are made out of strings. They're bouncy, trouncy, flouncy, pouncy, fun, 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 fun. But the most wonderful thing about Tiggers is I'm the only one. And I just pictured that Tigger bouncing on his tail, his bounding joy, you know. And I remembered him bouncing much higher and more often, you know, until I went back and looked at it. But that's what has been in my mind, that thinking.
Yeah.
And each one of us is unique. Though we may be, you know, to go back to that story, Christopher Robin is out now in a film, so it's popular once again. But some of us may identify more with Eeyore than Tigger. Or we may identify with Winnie the Pooh or any of the other characters. You know, I mean, that's what it's for. And it may be any given day we could identify as any one of them. But today we're going to talk about this journey of bounding hope. So this hope just, the definition for bounding or bound, we can think of bound, there's a couple of different meanings. One of them is like being bound up, being tied up. We're not talking about that because Jesus comes and he takes those binds, he takes those cords that hold us down and he breaks them.
Yes.
So we can forget about that kind of bound, that kind of bounding. We're not bound up any longer.
Yes.
Held together.
Yeah, well, there's binding of wounds. Okay, there's...
Being held together.
Yeah. But it's not being locked down bound.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being held in a prison of our own making.
Right.
Bounding means to walk or run with leaping strides. Think of that beggar that was healed and he went walking and leaping and praising God. Synonyms are leap, jump, spring, bounce. Bouncy, trouncy, bouncy. Yeah. But this bounding hope, it's a hope that runs, that leaps from us. It's commonly used in our modern day what? What do you think of when you hear that word hope? Anything come to mind? Anything at all? Anybody? Oh, I hope this happens.
Right.
I hope we get to go. I hope I get that job. We say it maybe flippantly, or with, you know, this air of, or, you know, well, I hope it happens. I hope we get to go.
Or sarcastically, keep hope alive.
Keep hope alive. But yeah, it becomes this, it's almost like cliche, or familiarity breeds contempt. We don't really think about it. It becomes more like a wish. This hope becomes more like a wish, rather than what it is in the biblical sense. And hope is commonly used to mean a wish. Its strength is the strength of the person's desire. It's limited by our own desire, this hope. Our hope can only go so far. Because as I think of this surgery, this upcoming surgery, my hope is that the doctor doesn't have a spasm while he's working on me. You know? But my hope can only go so far. If I put my hope in Dr. Smith, I'm failing. You know, we can't put our hope in things. We'll get there a little bit more.
No, because hope is limited by doubt.
There you go. Yeah. There's certain limitations. We're going to get more into these limitations in joy and hope and peace and love and what limitations there are today and in the coming weeks. In the Bible, hope is the confident expectation of what God has promised. It's the confident expectation. We can expect what God says, God will do. What the Father says, the Father will do. What Jesus says, Jesus will do. It's confident expectation.
Yes.
We can trust in Him. The confidence man. You know, I remember growing up watching Abbott and Costello, and, you know, Abbott would play this confidence man who, you know, say, well, give me 2/10 for a 5. And, you know, he did all these, you know, play on words to get Costello's money from him, doing all these different things. Or the Marx Brothers. Some of you remember that's some of my favorite films, or the Marx Brothers. And Chico Marx, give you a Tootsie Tootsie ice cream. He was at the racetrack, the horse track. Maybe you don't remember this, you never saw it. But he's at the horse track and he's selling these books on which horses to bet on. And it's like, well, you're going to need this book to know the horses and what kind of horses they are, if they're mutters or if they like the dry track, or, you know, how fast they go, how old they are, how many races they've won. Okay, but you're going to need this book to know the jockeys that are on those horses. Well, how much is that? Well, that's $2. How much is it? That's $5. Oh, you're going to need this book. And so he's taken his brother's money. So confidence, man. It's not that kind of confidence.
Right.
We can trust him. He's not going to rip us off.
Right.
The play on words, he was a stranger and I took him in.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's not like that. It's not like, you know, I'm taking him from. No. It's different. God has nothing but the best for us. Confident expectation of what God has promised. And its strength is in his faithfulness. So we have this hope. It's a confident expectation in what he says. And it's strong because he is faithful. He is faithful to bring it out. He's faithful to make it happen. Have you seen that in your own life? Have there been times where you have had that kind of hope?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Anything come to mind? Where you had hope and the Lord met you in that moment?
Yes.
Of need.
Right.
I know when it surpassed hope and it was complete confidence. Did not even, no doubt ever, just came right in. That was it. I had my bypass surgery.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
More than that, I was amazed because I couldn't believe that I wasn't afraid. I was completely and totally blown away by the whole thing. I think I told Don when he came in to pray for me that there is no fear. No hope was necessary. Complete confidence was there.
Yes. And we'll get into why that was. Did you have?
I was just going to say, for me, this is probably a little redeeming, but for me, I would just be shocked. Well,
so I'm always surprised, you know, because I struggle with just believing that God would love me that much. So, but he does. So.
When I was saying that, you know, asking if anybody had anything, I thought of you really specifically. And I remember there was one night we were having dinner at our house on Oak Leaf Court, and it was the night before Tammy and I were going to go bury my father. And sometime during the meal, you guys got a phone call about Angela. And I know there was hope. I know that there was hope that she would be okay. And as we were going through, as I was going through this emotional time of losing my father and us having to split up, and it was a time where Don and Sue were going through stuff, Roy and Tabitha were going through stuff, they were part of the leadership team. It just hit us like one after the other. But there was a hope, even as we were preparing to leave, a hope that Angela would be all right. And I know that you guys had that, you know, come on, this is your firstborn daughter. Angela had a stroke, very young age. How old was she?
28.
And had a stroke. And she is, I mean, almost back. I mean, what the Lord did in her body and how he brought about healing for her. It's remarkable. So God met you guys. I believe he met you and your hope for your daughter.
Mm-hmm. I was still shocked.
Well, yeah.
But definitely he did.
Yeah.
Because our minds can race and go, oh my gosh, what? So, sorry.
The most amazing thing was that Stephen was about to go to work when it happened. And it happened right before he went to work. So, had he gone to work and then
what?
It happened, then.
God's timing.
Yeah, it's impeccable. You know, it's like that day that I got hit by the car, you know, at work, when the security guard had a heart attack and came around the corner and pinned me up against the wall. You know, he had a heart attack, and he was dead. There was no sign of life. No, he wasn't breathing. There was no heartbeat. And they got the AED, brought it over there. They did the CPR and did chest compressions. The sheriff was there, who is just fantastic when it comes to that first aid kind of thing and doing CPR. Everything just came. And it happened just a few hours earlier. Pete would have been alone at the park. He would have been the only security guard at the park. And we would have pulled up to go into work that day, and he would have been either in the booth or in the car gone. But because it happened at that time, it just all worked out. And of course, Robert was making fun of me because as he's coming down, I'm like, what the? He said, you were yelling at a dead man. Don't you feel bad? So after Pete came back to work, I apologized to him. It's okay. I would have done the same.
Did he apologize to you?
So, he didn't have to.
I'm sorry.
He had a good reason for hitting me.
Sorry, I died and ran into you.
Actually, I think everybody would like to do that. Not die, but somehow run.
Give me a chair.
So hope. One of my favorite verses is from Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but desire fulfilled is a tree of life. Hope deferred means to put it off, like student loans that have been in deferment for 50 years. You know, things that are put off for a period of time. They deferred decision until February. We're gonna set that off. We're gonna postpone it. We're going to delay it. We're going to suspend this time. Put it on the back burner. We're going to defer. So, to say hope deferred makes the heart sick. If we put our hope off, some versions say it's rottenness to the bones. It's like a disease. If we don't have hope, we come to this place where we are in depression. We have anxiety. We have fears. Hope deferred. If we don't have hope, if we don't seek and find God's hope, it's going to be rottenness. It's going to be like a disease. It's going to be bringing us down.
That's kind of where I am at this point in our...
In the whole move?
Move, transition. I think the house may, or the property may get cleared sometime in the next couple of weeks. You know, and it's just like I've been not thinking about it, and now maybe we can think about it, but, you know.
Yeah, it's like talking about, you know, last week, talking about being the planners. And, you know, putting things in order and trying to plan out, well, we need to do this. And there's some things that, we have our little itinerary.
I think one of the examples of hope and the fruition of hope is a friend of ours had asked for prayer this week. They had a friend that was having an aneurysm. They were having brain surgery. And the surgery went well. We were praying for that. And then right away, they came back and said, please pray for Richard. He's blind. He's lost his vision. And... Man, it just came to me just like that. I wrote back to him, it's going to come back because it's the swelling of the brain. I just feel it's just the swelling of the brain from the surgery. And she said, well, I hope so. Well, she hopes so. Next day, he could see the shadow of the doctor. And then several hours later, his vision had returned. So the fruition of hope and prayer that you give, you offer up. And just another one of those things, you know, he was like, well, that's just the way things happen. Yeah, it is, but that's the way God makes it happen.
Right.
It's not like it's the way it is because Einstein figured this out. That's not what it was at all. And by the way, Einstein did figure it out in the end.
Keith, I don't think I have hope. I think I have complete trust. I don't, like, hope. I know that it's like, you know, whatever happens, it's going to be all right because... God is in control. It's
they interlock.
It's like branches on the same. Even when it appears like it will never come to the way you'd like it to visually be, you just know that it's going to.
Like you said, two different branches. Like one is, I hope I win the lottery, then I'm not going to live forever.
See, but living our life, we may start out with this hope, and then it's trust because. Paul says that we have to possess these things in ever-increasing measure.
Yes.
Okay, so it's continually growing. And what we were when we first came to the knowledge of Christ and began to trust in God and who we are now, hopefully it's grown a little bit and a little bit more. And I would say what Dolores has been through with various cancers and different things in personally and in your family and extended family, you've seen God move. Therefore, it's a hope, but it's a heck of a lot more trust. Because you know, you have confidence, this confident expectation that he's going to do it. So your hope is confident expectation. You have hope.
Right.
It's all Jesus. You know, the way you're using hope, the Christian sense, it's almost interchangeable with faith.
Yes.
And in fact, you know, Hebrews 11 says, faith is the substance of things hoped for.
Exactly.
Their Christian hope and faith are very closely related. And our faith and our hope is in Jesus. It's a person. It's a relationship. So, like you're just talking about these people where things are growing, as we walk more and more with Christ and we see him be faithful to us more and more, we just know how much he loves us more and more. It's a relationship. And our faith, our hope and our faith are just so completely related, but it's all centered on Jesus and who he is.
That's like that feeling you have when you, the difference in someone that has a perception of hope and the everlasting, and when their spouse or their parent dies, they're in despair. Or someone that has the faith and hope and the realization that God is real. When your parent or spouse or someone dies, you're elated because you know where they're going.
Yeah.
Like when Leanne's mother died, I mean, she was right there, held her in her arms and saw her go to Jesus. I mean, you saw it in her face. It's amazing stuff.
In a way, we make too much of death. I mean, death is not the end. All that, but you know, we're made that way. Jesus wept.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah, because after it's over, it doesn't hurt anymore.
And, you know, the mortality rate back in the time of Christ and even now, it says that he was wrapped in swaddling clothes. Those are grave clothes. When you do the study and you get into that, so he was born and prepared.
Wow.
As he was laid into the crèche, into that feeding trough, he was ready for burial.
We're born to die.
So, see, you had something? Okay. So hope deferred makes the heart sick. If we don't have hope, it can affect us physically. If we don't have hope, it affects us physically. Then desire fulfilled is a tree of life. When that hope, when the expectation, when that confident expectation, when we see it come to fruition, don't we get like this breath of life? Don't we just feel renewed, restored? Wow, it happened. We whatever it is that we were hoping for, there was the healing, there was the provision, you know, there was the stay of execution, whatever it might be. In Hebrews chapter 6, you mentioned Hebrews, and this was a tough thing to go through and find verses to use for hope, because there are just so many from Genesis to Revelation. So many words. I mean, we find love everywhere, we find joy everywhere, we find hope everywhere. And, you know, some of the hope is negative, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Well, how could that be? In Hebrews chapter 6, verse 9, another favorite verse, this hope we have, and it's about Jesus being the high priest and being in this place where he is our advocate between us and God the Father, and his promises for redemption and us coming into the kingdom. This hope we have is an anchor for the soul.
Yes.
An anchor.
Oh, that's good.
You know, the anchor that holds the ship in place. The anchor that keeps the foundation in place, the building, it's anchored. The anchors that keep this TV from falling on my head, you know. But we don't put our trust in this stuff. You know, they only work for so long, you know, we see. But this hope we have is an anchor for the soul, where we don't have to lie in despair. We don't have to,
right,
you know, be Eeyore all the time. You know, you know, a hope both sure and steadfast. It's sure, meaning it's always there. You can count on it. You can have confidence in it. It's steadfast. It's like taking two pieces of paper and glue and putting them together. Steadfast. If you try to separate it, what happens? Think of school days. You've got two of the college ruled pieces of paper, and you take your Elmer's glue and you put them together, and you just the whole thing, and then you try to peel them apart. You can't.
Right.
They've become one. It's steadfast. It will not move. We hope in his promises. We have a steadfast assurance. Matthew chapter 12, a battered reed. He's quoting, a battered reed he will not break off. And a smoldering wick he will not put out. They're trying to build a campfire. We were watching this program yesterday evening. It's one of those survivalist kind of shows. There's one of the hosts of the show is one of the guys that's on there is someone that we've quote unquote known for several years, you know, seeing him on television and hearing him on podcasts and that sort of thing. And former Army Ranger, you know, did a lot of stuff. Real survivalist. And anyway, we were watching this program and the man that was, what they do is they put you in a helicopter or something. They kidnap you, these five friends. They kidnap one of the friends, take him out to some remote place, drop him off with just a couple of items, and go, you've got 100 hours to get to civilization. They drop this guy off in the middle of Costa Rica. And what was it, like 70 miles one way, 30 miles another way, 60, you know, where he could get to civilization. And he had nothing. But he built that fire with that bow and drill. And it takes some time to do that, back and forth, until you get that little coal, that tiny little coal down there, fire. And you take your what is it, the, not the kindling.
Tinder.
Yeah, you take that down there, and it's like, just so gentle. Be gentle. Don't blow it out. You got to give it just enough oxygen. Okay, come on. Come on. There you go. There you go. That's how the Lord is with us. We may have just this tiny little coal of fire inside of us. Man, he's not going to snuff us out.
Right.
He doesn't, you know, take that candle and go and touch the wick and say, you're done. I'm done with you. The smoldering wick, he will not break off. Or a battered reed, he will not break off. And a smoldering wick, he will not put out. Until he leads justice to justice to victory. And in his name, Gentiles will hope. That's, I think that's all of us here.
Yay, brothers and sisters.
In him, Gentiles will hope. It's like, remember we've talked about this in the past where Jesus went into the temple and he overturned those tables? What? That was the court of the Gentiles. Jesus said, my Father's house will be a house of prayer for all nations, but you've made it a den of thieves. Why aren't the Gentiles allowed in here? He was hot. He didn't come just to save Israel. That's the chosen nation by which, the way by which he would come, the way through which the Messiah would come to the earth. But he came for all of us. So we hope in the Jewish Messiah.
Yes, right.
He's our hope. He's my hope. He should be. Psalm 42, and I'm going to read this whole psalm. It's from the NASB version, New American Standard. And it should be familiar with all of us in one way or another, maybe a psalm or two. Psalm 42, as the deer pants for the water brooks, so my soul pants for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? My tears have been my food day and night. While they say to me all day long, where is your God? These things I remember, and I pour out my soul within me. For I used to go along with the throng and lead them in the procession to the house of God, with the voice of joy and thanksgiving, a multitude keeping festival. Why are you in despair, O my soul? And why have you become disturbed within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him for the help of his presence. Oh my God, my soul is in despair within me. Therefore I remember you from the land of Jordan and the peaks of Hermon from Mount Mizar. Deep calls to deep at the sound of your waterfalls, and your breakers and your waves have rolled over me. The Lord will command his loving kindness in the daytime, and his song will be with me in the night, a prayer to the God of my life. I will say to God my rock, why have you forgotten me? Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? As a shattering of my bones, my adversaries revile me. While they say to me all day long, where is your God? Why are you in despair, O my soul? And why have you become disturbed within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise him, the help of my countenance and my God.
Yes.
I think without hope, we have to have hope. Without hope, that's probably a definition of depression. When you've lost all hope, you just are in despair, like you're talking about. And it's somehow how we're made. We're always hoping for something, maybe even more than one thing. But if you get to that point where you're not looking forward to something, you're not, you don't have a hope, you don't have some kind of goal, you're dead. You know, part of being alive is always looking forward to the next thing. Hopefully it's the next thing that God has for us, but we're always looking forward to something, and without that, it's just despair.
Yeah. I mean, there's a story that maybe some of us have experienced something similar. I doubt it. But that guy Job.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy Job. You know, here he, everything that he lost, everything that was taken away from him, and then the physical things that he went through, and then his own wife is there telling him, why don't you just give up and die? And he says, though the Lord would slay me, though he would kill me, though he would put me to death, I will trust in him. Then he said, though he kill me, though he do all these things to my body, I will still hope in him. And in all these things, Job did not sin. Whether it's a parable or whether it really happened as a material, the story is what we need to glean. That kind of an attitude that Job had. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. But he gives hope. And one little freebie here. Deep calls to deep at the sound of your waterfalls, and all your breakers and your waves have rolled over me. I looked up the definition for abounding. And this idea of abounding had to do with just this rolling water. Just think of this rolling water coming up and over you. And then water from underneath, like a rip current coming up from underneath, and just being engulfed, this abounding. And that may be scary, but if we think of it in being in God's love, in his peace, in his hope, in his joy, in his grace, all those things, this abounding where he just rolls over us and just take it. Man, we're just taking it all in and almost along for the ride. You know, we just get to experience this thing. Lastly, as we close this up, I read this, probably seen it, you know, at least three times in my life, you know, reading through the Bible, reading through the Psalms. But I saw this. You know how faith comes from God? Faith is the gift of God. That was what the Protestant Reformation, Revolution, what Martin Luther came to was faith in God. And that faith comes from the Father.
Yeah.
It doesn't come from us. It comes from Him. Psalm 62, verse 5 says, my soul, wait in silence for God only. My soul, wait in silence for God only. Don't wait for somebody else. We don't put our trust in horses or man. We don't put our trust in anything else but God. That doesn't mean we don't, you know, the whole analogy, the whole idea, do we trust when we put our foot to the brake pedal that's going to stop? If you're in Tammy's car, probably not. You just kind of hope it stops. Yeah, see? Right? Hope it stops. I hope it stops. My soul, wait in silence for God only, for my hope is from Him.
Right.
It's not our hope. It's a gift from God. Our hope comes from Him. So it's almost like there's a mustard seed of faith. There's a mustard seed of hope. I'm just going to add, it's, you know, you don't add anything to the Bible, but this idea of just God giving us hope.
Yes.
And we grow from there. Mm-hmm. It's we build up on these things in ever increasing measure. If it's just a tiny bit, or if it's a whole lot. There's a tree that I drive by several times a day when we go down to our dump, and we go in through the back way at Water Country. And there's this tree, and probably about maybe 13 years ago or so, we had a young kid that was working there. He crashed into the tree. And he took one of our carts that we drive, and the floorboard where your feet would go and where the pedals are is on an angle about like this. You know, here's parallel to the ground. And when he hit the tree, it folded up almost completely. and put his knees up to his chest.
Oh, Lord.
And, you know, I won't tell you why he hit it or how he came to hit it, but it pretty much demolished the cart and had to be sent out and cut up and rewelded and all that. He was okay, even though he has his knees attached to his shoulders. But the bark of the tree was damaged. And if you've ever seen where bark has been removed from the tree in some way, shape, or form, yet the tree continues to grow, but there's this space where you can see where the damage took place. And there's probably about maybe 2 to 3 inches now of tree that had grown. And then there's the spot where the injury took place. And I'm just saying this because it grows in ever-increasing measure. And sometimes there's these spots where we've been wounded, and it's not growing like it should. We can be in healing mode.
Yeah.
It's still in some areas. Yep. In love and forgiveness and peace and joy and mercy and grace. We grow. And if you've seen any pictures in social media or in books, magazines of like a bicycle that was leaned up against a tree, and many, many years later, that bicycle is actually part of the tree because it grows in and takes it up. Those wounds eventually heal as it grows. And as time happens, that wound becomes smaller and smaller, and I'll probably be dead and gone long before it's even close to be closed up. Or maybe a hurricane will come and knock that thing over. Who knows? Well, we know. So anything anyone has to share regarding this bounding joy or bounding hope, this hope that we have within us that can grow, where we may have this, man, I can't hold on to this. What's going to happen? And knowing some of your stories, I would say it's probably very tempting more than once to give up hope. To just say, I can't do it, I can't go on. But our hope is in Him, and our hope comes from Him.
Yes.
I do, when we're singing the song, You're a Good, Good Father. Just at the end, it came to me that, you know, that would be a good thing for us to recite to ourselves if we wake up every morning. You're a good, good father. That's who you are. I am loved by you. That's who I am.
Yeah.
Because that also builds that hope again. French, regardless of what we're facing for the day, that those truths don't change. For some days, you know, we look with anticipation for the day, and sometimes we face the day with dread. Knowing that, reminding ourselves that He's a good father, that's who He is, and we're loved by Him, that's who we are. I think that would go a long way to reestablishing hope for the new day.
Yeah, to meditate on that kind of a word, because it's definitely biblical.
Definitely.
You know, so to meditate on something like that, something we could sing, even, not just say it, but sing
mm-hmm.
it. Even just that line, you know, those two lines over.
Yeah.
Meditate on it, almost like, hate to say the word mantra, because it conjures up this idea of Eastern meditation and all, but to just say that to the Lord and to ourselves.
Well, that's what we say in the words Selah, like we were saying before.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're supposed to
do.
Yeah,
you rest on
that. That is the mantra. We are the living Lord.
Yeah.
You're in your time.
Thank you, Lord.
He gave it to you.
I have a sometimes when I hear that word, I love that word, Selah. And there's a song by Larry Norman. It's fantastic. It's got that title in it. And, early on in our marriage, Tammy and I were talking about kids. And there was a period where we were like, yeah, we want to have children. We want to have kids. And somebody at our church went out and bought a little gift, some baby clothes, and couple of bibs and things and put them in a box just as a kind of, you know, kind of like a little seed. We still have it. And when we got the house, there was the one room that we went in and wrote two names down on the floor. And the first name, if we had a boy, would have been Judah, which is praise. The Lion of the Tribe of Judah. It would have been Judah Leon. Leon is my uncle and my cousin. It means lion. So Judah. And for the baby to be a little girl, it would have been Salem. Mm. And so when I hear those words, a lot of times I think about that. Those kids that, for whatever reason.
It's too bad time didn't work out. You got ahead of ours.
Yeah, they would have been worse off. They would have been a lot worse off. Anyway.